Today is Halloween, so today we've decided to do something a little different than what you would normally expect from hashtag LocalGovMatters. Please join us on a journey of haunted Wisconsin. Hello, and welcome to hashtag LocalGovMatters. I'm Gwen Gunther, president of the Wheeler Report. Today, I'm joined by author Michael Norman. Hello, Michael.
Well, good morning, Gwen. Thanks for having me on.
Well, I'm glad you're here. So, Michael, can you tell me a little bit about the book Haunted Wisconsin? How did it come to be, and how have the updates happened?
Well, that can be a long story or a short story. I'll try to hit the short part of it. We have to go way back to the 1970s, actually, because the first edition of Haunted Wisconsin was published in 1980. And since then, it's now in its third edition, published by the University of Wisconsin Press, with some new stories and so forth. It began as a collaborative project with another writer. Her name was Beth Scott, she was a professional writer, freelance writer, and I would have her sometimes guest lecture in my feature writing class at the university here at the University of Wisconsin, River Falls. And we would talk about writing and what kind of writing she did. And I had indicated that one of my interests was in writing a book, eventually becoming an author. But I didn't know what I would write about. We started talking about writing books. She didn't have much interest in it. But I thought, well, you know, maybe there's something that we could find that hasn't been done before. And we started looking, and one of the books that I read was, we wanted to do something regionally, maybe something, you know, about Wisconsin. One of the books I read was a book of Wisconsin lore by Dr. Robert Gard, who was a professor of English at the UW in Madison. And in one of his books about Wisconsin folklore, he claimed that from the people that he'd interviewed, there were perhaps more ghosts per square mile in Wisconsin than in any other state, which I found an extraordinary statement to make.
No kidding.
What did this mean? And I pointed it out to Beth, and I thought, well, you know, if there are lots of ghost stories and lots of ghosts and ghost stories in Wisconsin, maybe a book of ghost stories from the state would be interesting. And that began the talk about this particular subject. Discovered that no one had ever collected Wisconsin ghost stories. There have been chapters such as the one that Dr. Gard had included in his book, Wisconsin Lore. But that was about it. I thought, well, let's look into it. So we started that process, seeing what kind of stories were out there. That's the short version of the early of how it all came about.
So did this book on Wisconsin lore that said there are more ghosts per square mile in Wisconsin say why Wisconsin has such activity, or are there just more stories that are written down? Or?
Well, maybe more stories. I mean, you have to remember he was a folklorist. So there might be a little bit of exaggeration there, based upon he would travel around the state and interview people about all kinds of sort of local or, historic things. And, if somebody had a ghost story, they would tell it to him. So it sort of piqued our thoughts. We had no background in, not a parapsychologist or a ghost hunter or anything of that sort. But I suggested that, if we wrote a book like this and could somehow get it published, it might be something the Boy Scout troops would buy. We might, might even make a few dollars on something like this.
So, when you started collecting the stories, where did you start? How did you pick? Did you go from community to community?
That was probably the hardest part of all, because we really didn't know. Well, how do we, do you just walk up to people and say, do you have a ghost story to tell? Actually, we started in archives and, reading old newspaper accounts and talking to people. One of the most helpful things that we did, and actually we found our publisher this way, I told Beth, look, if we're doing a statewide book and here, we are in one part of the state, how are we going to find stories from, Green Bay or Fond du Lac or Platteville or, different corners of the state. One of the things I did, I wrote letters to the editor of most weeklies and dailies around the state of Wisconsin, asking them to publish this letter in which I said, look, you know, we're two writers, we're collecting ghost stories from Wisconsin. Do you have a good story to tell? Let us know. And we got a lot of responses that way. In fact, we even got our publisher, Mark Lefebvre, who was a publisher of a company called Sten and Lee. And he saw that letter that I think it was a State Journal or perhaps the Cap Times had published that I had written. And he said, he wrote us a letter and said, gee, this sounds like a really interesting book. Do you have a publisher yet? And we didn't. And we were excited, thrilled, and we chatted and got a contract and moved forward.
Wonderful. Well, when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about some of the specific haunted Wisconsin stories.
The League of Wisconsin Municipalities advocates for Wisconsin's 600 cities and villages, speaking up for local democracy and common-sense citizen-led government. Learn more at lwm-info.org.
Welcome back to Hashtag Local Gov Matters. I'm Gwen Gunther of The Wheeler Report, and I'm joined today by haunted Wisconsin author Michael Norman. So when I was reading through the book, I noticed several stories or references to media coverage. There were Journal Sentinel stories, there were Madison stories, there were weekly stories. Now, whether it was a local news person that came to the story, or in some cases you even had national media that showed up to cover some of the things, this seems like a very different type of media coverage than what we expect in our newspapers today.
Well, now I don't know if that is entirely accurate. I mean, it seems to me, if you look at the date of a lot of these stories, they're published right around Halloween, it's still kind of a tradition. If there's a local haunted house, an editor will tell his reporter, go find a ghost story from around here. You know, it's Halloween coming up. So we do find those stories a lot around Halloween in particular. Is there a ghost story? And what you find is that in the old days, in the 19th century, early 20th century, they were much more common because people didn't have alternative media, to go to. They didn't have, computers and so forth. And so they would tell stories, local stories. I think probably one of the stories you're talking about, we call the Lynch Affair, in St. Croix County, in which literally hundreds of reporters reportedly showed up with this to investigate, quote unquote, this house that had a poltergeist, a noisy ghost, and then would write stories about it. The editor of the local Menominee newspaper, a man with a great name of Rock Flint, Flint Rock, had written things and said he thought it was real. It was entertainment in that era. With this particular story in St. Croix County, there are reports that anywhere from 300 to 1,000 reporters and curiosity seekers showed up at this house and would, either camp out and wait for something to happen or try to investigate it themselves. It was, quite a phenomenal thing.
So
I don't think, reporters probably don't investigate that much anymore. You're doing a story for Halloween, in the local paper is what's happened. Plus there are a lot of, alternatives now. We didn't have cable channels filled with ghost stories as we do now.
Well, I have to say, when I first started reading the story titled Do Not Disturb, I immediately envisioned the movie Poltergeist. And let me read an excerpt from it. Old Teddy King grunted and sweated as he dug in the Knapp cemetery plot that held his mother's coffin. With each swing of his shovel, Teddy slowly cleared away nearly 30 years of dirt and stone so that he could move his mother's remains to another graveyard nearby. It was late August 1936. St. Croix County officials had ordered the graves moved, A new road was going to be built, and the county needed the cemetery as part of the right-of-way. So, first of all, it's right out of the movie Poltergeist, where they put a community over top of a cemetery. But I also found it interesting that in 1936, when they wanted to put in a road, that somebody was moving his mother's cemetery. I would have thought that that would have been something that the county would have done to put in the new road.
I guess taxes weren't high enough to do that. I know. I got this story and another one that I used in Haunted America from the gentleman himself. He told this story. You know, you read it today and you think, really? You have to move your mother's remains yourself because they're putting a roadway through here? But that's just the way it was, apparently. And kind of a scary thing. You can see where a ghost story would arise from that. And this story deals with a casket handle that kind of moves around the house.
Right.
And calls to them to, don't disturb the grave. But of course they had to.
Exactly.
And I think, the visual of out there with his shovel, digging up the coffin that holds his mother's remains, I keep thinking, oh, ooh.
I agree.
It's one of those stories that kind of sends a shiver. And you do actually wonder, I guess, from a public service or a political standpoint, you're making, citizens dig up the cemetery themselves. But apparently that was the case. I'm not sure what would have happened or what happened to those graves where there was no one connected to the person around anymore. I don't know. I would hope that the county did it.
So I told several people when I was reading this book that I was reading the book and that we were going to do a podcast and talk about the book. And most often I got people talking about the Ridgeway ghost. So can you tell us a little bit about the story?
Well, I think people like that story because it's kind of a classic folk tale slash, real people kind of story. It goes back to the actually pre Civil War era in southwestern Wisconsin and the lead mines. And it deals with a kind of a classic ghost story in that it was a shapeshifter. It was a ghost that would appear as a headless horseman, might appear as a herd of cattle, might appear as a wolf, might appear just as some kind of a strange shape. And there are many, 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 many stories about the Ridgeway ghost showing up. And I think that much of it, was the result of, the era in which they lived, the gas lamps. If you were out at night, you were in a buckboard or in your buggy and you had a couple of lamps. It was a dark, scary time. It happened, for the most part, the ghost stories take place along the old military ridge road between Madison and Dodgeville, that area. And it was scary. So it was very easy to imagine, if you heard something behind you and it's pitch dark and you're on a rough road through the forest, that it could be something that you didn't want to see. I think that's probably part of it. There's a headless horseman piece to it in that one of the best known versions of the story has to do with the murder of a peddler at one of the old roadhouses. And he had a black horse. And after his death, his form would be seen sitting backward on his horse, minus his head, galloping after you. So, it kind of gives that frame.
Mm-hmm. So what story in your book do you most often get asked about?
Oh, that's a hard question because, when I'm talking about the book, most people haven't read it yet. So they haven't had a chance. I think those are certainly two of them that do. You had talked about one, dealing with not only media coverage, but, sort of the political aspect to it. If I'm in a particular region or area of Wisconsin, then you know, it might be a story from you know, from there. You know, we tried in our writing, you know, to base the stories on as much factual information as we could find. These are not stories that are made up. You know, there are many, 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 many tales from around this state and around other states as well that say something like, well, there's a woman in white who appears at the intersection of a particular couple of roads. Or, you know, there's a ghost story. There's a ghost in the old church, in town. But you can't trace it down to anybody, to anything. We wanted to, you know, to interview people. We wanted to go to places, see if we could, you know, sort of dig into the story a little bit more. So I think those are the ones that tend to be most popular. You know, anything from the 19th century, you can say, well, you know, those are the old days and people were just, you know, making things up. But the ones that are contemporary are a little bit more difficult to dismiss. You know, we like to believe in these things, or at least, you know, we're a little, you know, we're skeptical, yes, but on the other hand, you know, I think it goes to that fundamental question of, you know, what happens after death? Mm-hmm. You know, is this the end? Is it, you know, ashes to ashes and dust to dust? Or is there, you know, something, some possible way that we survive? You know, it's a kind of a chilling question.
So you talk about several different types of ghosts or poltergeists or apparitions. How did you go about learning more about the different types of things that people come across?
Well, we didn't want to come across as ghost hunters or parapsychologists. I mean, there are a lot of individuals, you know, who even now, in fact, is far more popular, who are ghost hunters, and then they, you know, they'll have their own television series. You know, we didn't want to do that. What we tried to do was approach it as journalists and say, okay, here's the information we have. You know, we you know, hope to write it in an interesting, compelling way. But we're not going to tell you what to believe. You know, as a good journalist, you know, we're going to tell you the story, tell you the tale, and then leave it up to you to, you know, to believe it or not. And I think people like that approach. You know, that's the feedback that I get a lot. You know, I really like the way you don't tell me what to believe. You just, you know, you lay it out. You know, we can trust the information, trust the facts, and then make up our own minds.
Perfect. Well, stay tuned. There's more to come.
The Wisconsin Counties Association represents Wisconsin's 72 counties at both the state and federal level. Learn more about how counties impact your community at wicounties.org.
You're listening to Hashtag Local Gov Matters. I'm Gwen Gunther of the Wheeler Report, and today's guest is haunted Wisconsin author Michael Norman. So when I first contacted you about the book, you said that you had heard of the Wheeler Report before and were a little surprised that we wanted to interview you on your book. But as I began reading the book, one interesting political fact I found was the story of another voice. And the interesting part was this house was built by Charles D. Parker, who was Wisconsin's lieutenant governor from 1874 to 1878. And then one of the owners was Tim Early, who was the son of Michael P. Early, a Democrat from River Falls, who served in the assembly from 1971 to 1977. So I found it very interesting that there was a little political tie in this. And it was one of the stories that seemed to just, you know, you never really know where those voices came from.
That's very true. And in the, I'm not sure which edition, if you're reading the new edition or not, but the third edition, but there was a whole piece of it that I added for the second edition dealing with a police officer in town.
Right.
who went to investigate, you know, reports of screaming and someone in distress in an apartment. The house is now apartments, kind of shoddy looking building now, and apartments. And the people that lived below had called the police saying somebody's being beaten to death, you know, upstairs. Can you help us? So he showed up and went up, heard voices coming from the inside of the room, and banged on the door. Nobody came to the door. He made the decision to go burst, to go through the door. It didn't have a search warrant, but he felt somebody was in immediate distress. And the only person in there was a naked man, who was apparently high on some sort of drugs, and disclaimed saying anything or screaming or anything of that sort. It had been described as a woman's voice. And there was only one person in there. And when I interviewed the officer, and he was absolutely, and this was several years after the event, he was absolutely convinced of what took place. He was the kind of source that I really like to have, for a ghost story.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to dismiss it as imagination. You hope that officers aren't imagining things, when they answer a report of like this. And in the same way with Tim Early, in fact, I had known Tim, for a time, and he was, well respected in the community and had a story to tell, he and his wife both, that's hard to, push aside because, of the source, because of the witness and the things that they had seen.
Right.
I hadn't thought of the political aspect of it, I don't think it's Colonel Parker. He was called Colonel Parker. Colonel Parker was the ghost. I'm not sure who it was.
Right. You mentioned in the first part of the podcast that there were other books, and you've talked about Haunted America. What other books do you have, and are you working on anything new right now?
Well, Haunted Wisconsin was the first of about seven books that I've done either alone or with Beth. Beth passed away in 1994. We were in the middle of working on a book then. But Haunted Wisconsin was followed by Haunted Heartland, which was published in 1985 and is now in its second edition from the University of Wisconsin Press. That sold very well. It's been very popular. It was a Warner Books paperback. Barnes & Noble had a hardcover version of it. That was a follow-up to Haunted Wisconsin in a way, in that we have a lot of Wisconsin stories in it, plus stories from nine other Midwestern states. After that, Haunted America and Historic Haunted America. Beth had started on those and died before they were finished. So I finished those books. They were published by Tor. I followed that with Haunted Heritage and Haunted Homeland. These were books of what I thought were the most fascinating ghost stories from all 50 states, plus Canada and Washington, D.C. I did a book in Minnesota called The Nearly Departed, Minnesota Ghost Stories and Legends, that was published by the Minnesota Historical Society Press. So it's turned into kind of a little train.
It has. Well, that's the end of today's podcast. I want to thank you for coming. I enjoyed reading your book. Tell people where they can pick up a copy of Haunted Wisconsin.
Well, if you have a bookstore in your community, if you're lucky enough to have a bookstore, should have copies of it. It's for sale through Amazon and all the online retailers, and it will be there waiting for you.
Well, thank you for coming or for being on the show.
For
additional information or links to specific documents and where you can find the book, go to thewheelerreport.com and check out the podcast details. We want to make sure that people know that they can catch us on community radio. We are on Rice Lake Radio 105.5 FM, Wapaka Radio 96.3 FM, Sun Prairie Radio 103.5 FM. And as always, I want to thank the League of Wisconsin Municipalities and the Wisconsin Counties Association for working with me on this podcast. And thank you to Jackie Johnson for doing our sound editing.